Paramahamsa Parivrajikacharya Astatara Satishishima Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavrindi Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Premsa Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shyamakun Radhakun Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Shri Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Jamuna Mai Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samvaita Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Nitai Gora Premanande Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacham Nivisesha Sanyavari Pasyatyade Shita. Hare Krishna. Okay, if you like, you can always come a little more forward. You can even bring your chairs forward if you want to sit on chairs. I have no problem with that. But it's my eyesight is fading, especially through the smoke. And that's my excuse. It's just I like to be able to see everyone nice and clearly if I can. And then I don't have to speak quite so loudly. You can. Who's is Jayanti? Jayanandi here?
No, he's not here.
He's not here. Okay, that's very unusual. Then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who?
Where is he?
I'm not sure where he is.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'll check with him later. I'm sure he's got a good excuse. Okay. So let's start with Prabhupada's pranams and the verses on page 1, if we can please. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Vastyacha Deshatarne Om Ajnana Timarandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshuram Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Darati Sapadandikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sujivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Lina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Ratha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatanubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Bol. Okay, where did we get up to last week? We were on chapter 1, definitely, observing the armies. We read text 4, I think, and
we got to text 7, did we?
Up to text 7?
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
No purport, so.
That's right. Okay. So, let's start then. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So this is on page 41, yeah? Everybody with us. Asmakam,
asmakam
tu
vishishta,
ye. Asmakam tu vishishta, ye.
Asmakam tu vishishta, ye.
Tan,
nibodha,
dvijottama, tan nibodha, dvijottama,
tan nibodha, dvijottama.
Nayaka,
Nayaka
Mama,
Mama
Sainyasya
Nayaka
Mama Sainyasya
Nayaka Mama Sainyasya
Sangyatam
Sangyatam
Tan
Bravimi
Bravimi Te
Sangyatam
Tan Bravimi
Te Sangyatam Tan Bravimi Te
Asmakam tu vishishtaye
Asmakam tu vishishtaye
Tani bodha dvijottama
Tani bodha dvijottama
Nayaka mama sainyasya
Nayaka mama sainyasya
Sangyatam tan bravimi te
Sangyatam tan bravimi te
Asmakam tu vishishtaye
Asmakam tu vishishtaye
Tani bodha dvijottama
Tani bodha dvijottama
Nayaka mama sainyasya
Nayaka mama sainyasya
Sangyatam tan bravimi te
Sangyatam tan bravimi
te Okay, who'd like to start the ball rolling?
Asmakam tu
vishishtaye
Tani bodha dvijottama
Nayaka mama sainyasya Samgyatam tam bravimite See, you're poised to do it.
I've noticed, I've walked in while you were doing it. I'll give it a
go.
Asmakam tu vishishtaye.
Asmakam tu vishishtaye.
Tani bodha dvijottama.
Tani bodha dvijottama.
Nayaka mama sainyasya.
Nayaka mama sainyasya.
Namnartam tan pravrittimte.
Sangyatam tan bravimi te.
Asmakam tu vivishtaye.
Asmakam tu vishishtaye.
Tani bodha dvijottama.
Tani bodha dvijottama.
Nayaka mama sainyasya.
Nayaka sama sainyasya.
Samjanatam tan bravimi te.
Sangyatam tan bravimi te. Anyone else like to try while we're here? Would you like to try for me? Feel free. Okay.
Asmakam tu
vishishtaye. Tani bodha dvijottama. Nayaka mama sainyasya. Samgyatam tan bravimi te. Asmakam.
Asmakam.
Our.
to but Vishishta,
especially powerful.
Yay,
who?
Tan,
them.
Nibodha,
just take note of.
Be informed.
Dvijja
Uttama,
O best of the
Brahmanas.
Nayaka,
captains.
Mama,
my.
Sainyasya,
of the soldiers.
Sangya
Artam,
for information.
Tan,
them.
Bravimi,
I am speaking.
Te,
to you.
But for your information, O best of the Brahmanas, let me tell you about the captains who are especially qualified to lead my military force. So responsively, please. But for your information, O best of the Brahmanas, let me tell you about the captains
who are especially qualified
to lead my military force. So there's no purport that Prabhupada has given us here. But who is speaking to who? Dronacharya, yes, the best of the Brahmins. He must address him as the best of the Brahmins because he's his guru. And actually here we see that Drona is being encouraged. Can anyone give us a brief synopsis about what's gone on so far on the battlefield? Who would like to give us a few details on what's going on, just to recap?
I think what's gone on is that the battle's about to start, and basically Duryodhana's getting a bit edgy because I've seen the Pandavas army and get a bit envious of obviously Arjuna and Krishna in the chariot. So I think Duryodhana's actually gone up to Dronacharya and saying, like hey up, please actually take the battle seriously. And basically just is trying to stir the dagger in and just get Dronacharya a bit more angry, a bit more passionate about the battle, because he's obviously fighting for Duryodhana's kingdom.
Okay, good.
That's my version.
Okay, anyone else like to add anything to that?
You see, like, the comparison going on between the two armies. So, they've started talking about the Pandava side, and then slowly moving on to the Kaurava side.
Okay, yes.
Going on as well.
Okay, good. Anything else?
Well, I mean, as I understand that, Arjun is, Dronacharya's, like, favorite disciple. So he kind of favors him a lot. So I think here, Duryodhana's kind of quite intelligently weighing up both sides. He's kind of having a look at, you know, what's going on there, who do they have, and he's also looking at his own side. And similar to what Sanjay said, he's kind of agitating, or trying to agitate Dronacharya by using certain things, especially like he's saying, this intelligent disciple of yours, the son of Drupada, and kind of very diplomatically speaking to his Guru Maharaj, and getting him kind of fired up to fight. That's what I've understood.
Okay, yes, good. Anyone else like to add anything to that? Are we, do we have anyone live on
board?
Okay, that's good. On Skype or on the...
Skype.
Not on the...
Not on the site.
So. All right. Anyway, who is this? Who is here?
It's Pundaracharya.
Pundaracharya. Yeah. Hare Krishna Prabhu. Hare Bol. So... Thank you. Right, well, let's see if we can just get into a few other details about this. That we know that Duryodhana, he's a very clever diplomat. Why has he first started speaking then about the army of the Pandavas? Why didn't he start talking about his own strengths, his own brilliant military force first of all?
Because this, the Pandavas, the military was very nicely arranged by Dhrishtadyumna,
mm-hmm.
and he saw this out of fear, he said, oh, he was fearing. This is fear, it just showed. And then he spoke to Dronacharya. And Bhishma Pitama.
Okay, good. Another point we can also bear in mind, a point that Prabhupada makes, is that if you're going to have a fight, the first thing is to know the strength of your enemy. It's not enough to know your own strength. You have to really know the strength of your enemy before you have a fight. Because otherwise, if you're just thinking about your own strength, then you've actually got no way of really judging how to best handle the situation. So Duryodhana is properly smart. He knows what to do. And there are a few points here that are made in this very nice book, Surrender Unto Me. And that is, Duryodhana didn't want to discourage those listening to his own fears concerning the Pandava strength. Therefore he added, let me tell you about the great warriors on my side. So he's made it very clear that they're a formidable army. But he said, now, well, it's, you know, he wants to encourage everyone and boost the morale of everyone. So that's why he's speaking now about how great our team is. So we shall see. Any questions or comments so far?
I mean, I understood it that it was like a Kshatriya conduct to see what the opposite army is like and to kind of weigh them up.
Yes.
And that's what Duryodhana was doing. We can see in other cases, like in the Battle of Ramayana, when Ravana kind of sent out people to kind of sniff around and, you know, see what kind of power is inside.
Mm.
So I think that that's kind of one of these aspects.
Yes, that was a very interesting point. And I'm glad you mentioned the situation with Ravana, because a couple of other similarities I wanted to draw there. And that is that Ravana sent spies to check out what Ram and his army were actually up to. Very significant point. Ram was a very noble Kshatriya, a great man of his word. And because he left Ayodhya without any support except his brother Lakshman and his wife Sita, who obviously it was a very difficult thing to take Sita, because if you take your wife away, then, you know, there's bound to be trouble, especially if she happens to be as extraordinarily qualified and beautiful as Mother Sita, there's highly likely to be trouble. Therefore, the recommendation is that when one goes away, one doesn't take the wife. Otherwise, as we see from the incident of the Ramayana, so much trouble ensues. But also, on that point, that Ram, because he went without any army, he went without any support, so he had to recruit a new army. So he recruited an army of
monkeys,
yes, the Vanaras, actually. Very extraordinary, not ordinary monkeys. These were actually demigods who'd been requested by the Lord to take birth, but to come with all kinds of mystic powers and facilities and great strength so that they could assist Lord Ram and his pastimes. Now, it just so happened, on that point, while we're talking about the codes of conduct, that Vibhishan, who had already left Ravan's kingdom after trying his level best to convince Ravan to see sense, but Ravan simply wouldn't have it, and he practically threw him out of the kingdom when actually Vibhishan told Ravan, he said, everyone here is simply a fool. They're all flattering you. And actually, they're your worst enemies. Because by flattering you, they're not doing you any favors. They're giving you really bad advice. And Indrajit, you're the biggest fool. Because you're encouraging and hyping up your father in this way to fight. So actually, you're the biggest fool. And I'm saying this, Ravan, for your benefit. And everyone there, if, you know, the saying, if looks could kill, they would have killed Vibhishan there and then. But Ravan, he was so furious with him that Vibhishan, he left, he was exiled. So he came to he came across the ocean and landed in front of Ram, And everyone was very much anxious that, oh, it's Vibhishan. He's Ravan's brother. He's going to be causing trouble. You know, we better kill him right now because he's the enemy. He's just going to come here and spy on us. But Hanuman pointed out, no, actually, there's nothing of any fault in his character. Actually, he has excellent character. And he's come here to surrender to Lord Ram. And Lord Ram pointed out that if anyone even once surrenders to me and takes my shelter, then I am duty bound to give them all protection. So many significant points come. But then when Ravan sent his spies to see what was actually happening, then Vibhishan, with his mystic power, he could detect that these persons who were dressed up as monkeys were actually Ravan's spies. And Ram called for them. And he told Vibhishan, you inform them, Vibhishan, tell them everything about our entire military campaign, show them our whole camp, show them our whole strategy, show them our whole plan of campaign, what we're about to do, and go and let them go and take the message to Ravan. He wasn't messing about. You know, no hiding, just completely up front, Ravan, we're going to smash you. Because Hanuman had already been across and caused so much trouble in Lanka.
He set fire to Lanka,
and then he chastised Ravan and told him that he said, just see, Ravan, I am just one of Ram's army, and there are millions, millions more like me, just as strong and powerful as me, and they're all coming to kill you. So you have one last chance to surrender to Ram and return Mother Sita. Otherwise, your whole dynasty will be finished. But Ravan didn't have good intelligence, so he couldn't accept. He just didn't have good intelligence. He had all good advice, all good instruction, first-class example, but he was just too attached. He was too overtaken by lust and greed and anger, and he just couldn't hear it. So anyway, that was a problem. Now the reason I wanted to also mention about Ram, can anyone think of, you know, because all this trouble that's going on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, it's a seriously troublesome situation. I mean, with all these hundreds of millions of people about to be killed. And there's also the trouble in the Ramayana where Ram gets exiled to the forest. Can anyone think of a similarity in the cause of these two disturbances in the human society? Can anyone draw any similarity?
Is it abuse of power? Because Ravan had a lot of power, and so did the Kauravas, and they abused the power.
That's certainly true. I was thinking something more causal than that, something more back to the cause of all the trouble in the first place, before they actually decided to have to get into big battles. And both these battles, it's interesting to note, are fought by the Lord and the Vaishnavas. Not namby-pamby pushovers, but serious big battles, and the heroes are the Lord and his devotees. But what is it that is so similar in the cause of all the disturbance in the first place?
Is it, are we talking about the women like Draupadi and Kaikeyi, who asked, you know, power from Dasarath, you know, for his son to become king, which led him to be exiled? And Draupadi was, you know, sort of, was the stripped naked in the court, which then caused anger, which was the cause of...
That was certainly one of the causes of the whole... That was kind of symptomatic of the problem. It was certainly symptomatic of the problem that the Kauravas were jealous of the Pandavas, like anything. And that's actually the point.
Probably it's jealousy.
It's jealousy, actually. Because Duryodhan, he was jealous of his nephews. He was jealous of his nephews, and he didn't want them to have the throne. And someone else was jealous of Ram and didn't want him to be on the throne. Who was that?
KK.
Hmm?
KK.
Uh-uh.
Mantara.
Mantara. Mantara. She went into Kaikei's ear, because Kaikei, when she heard the news, because it was Mantara who brought her the news, that actually Ram is going to be crowned. He's going to be crowned tomorrow as the king. And Mantara, she was so envious of Lord Ram, she was so jealous of Lord Ram, that she couldn't handle it. And so she started really working on Kaikei. And with her poisonous words, she got into Kaikei's heart. She saw that there's, you can see that it's a natural scenario that when, for example, in the Vedic culture, that a king, and it was a very common occurrence, that kings would have more than one wife, and Kaikeyi was the favorite queen of King Dasarath. So naturally there is room for jealousy and envy and stuff like that. But actually they were all living very peacefully and very harmoniously. And they all loved all the children, especially all the queens. They loved Ram, and they were so happy that Ram was going to be the king. But Mantara, she used her pernicious mood to get right in there and disturb her heart and disturb her mind. So much so that she became convinced to become so determined to force her husband that you must do what? What did she force her husband to do? Yeah, amazing.
She used her benedictions, right?
She called in her boons this is what she was going to do. But it's interesting to see the power of Hare Krishna Bhupendraji. It's interesting to see the power of association and the power of words when they're misused, and when one gets bad association, how everything, and a very auspicious situation can become a very inauspicious situation. So this is another very good lesson for us. And we can see that unfortunately it's a sad trait of human nature that human beings sometimes behave really abominably. It's a sad fact of life. So we shouldn't be too surprised when we see it. But one thing we should know is that that atmosphere that was created was an ungodly atmosphere. So how do we understand the difference between a godly atmosphere and an ungodly atmosphere? What can we draw as a learning experience from these two epic incidents about the difference between a godly atmosphere and an ungodly atmosphere?
With this jealousy, hatred, revenge, they're all ungodly.
Yes.
Atmosphere.
Yes.
Everything opposite, that is, they're all godly.
Yes, when there is freedom from envy and jealousy, and love and compassion, then actually this is a godly atmosphere. So these are actually godly qualities, and we can see that Arjuna's qualities, as opposed to Duryodhana's qualities on the battlefield. Arjuna is there on the battlefield, and he's not bearing a grudge against Duryodhana. He's thinking, better that I fight, better that I be killed, unarmed and unresisting, than to fight in this ghastly warfare. He actually displays the qualities and characteristics of a gentle Vaishnava. That's one way of looking at it. But there's another way of looking at it, that out of his bodily conception of life also, is that he's forgetting his duty and becoming overwhelmed by the mood of weakness, actually. He describes it himself in Bhagavad Gita. He describes it, because of miserly weakness, I don't know what to do anymore. So Krishna, I need to get your instruction on this to understand what to do and what not to do. So you see that the acharyas present different aspects at different times to give us a nice rounded picture of Arjuna's character and the state of mind he's in that's causing him to ask Krishna to please speak Bhagavad Gita to him. So these are different points to bear in mind. But certainly one of the primary characteristics of Vaishnavas is to become non-envious and not to see the faults in others, actually. Whereas, and in fact, one of the characteristics of a Vaishnava is that he has an aversion to fault finding. If he's going to find fault, who does he find fault with?
Himself.
Himself, yeah. Because we've got a lot of work to do on ourselves, and you know, other people, they're going to have to sort themselves out. But we actually have to work on ourselves. That's something we can do something about. So these are some nice lessons to be drawn from all these events. Any questions or comments?
Just going back to imperialism, do you think he was a bit arrogant as opposed to just saying, look what they've got, teaching. They've got this many, but look at us. See, we've got, our army's better than their army.
Yes.
There's
a natural rivalry. There's, as we've been reading in the Nectar of Devotion on Thursdays, one of the characteristics of Kshatriyas is chivalrous activity. And chivalry is exhibited between the cowherd boys in Vrindavan also. The boys, they like to challenge each other and fight each other and show their superiority. Sridham, Krishna is described how Krishna was quite amazed to see Sridham defeat Lord Balaram easily with a small stick when Balaram with his club had smashed the mighty Pralambasura. And so they're often having chivalrous fights. But the thing to bear in mind here is that the natural chivalry and rivalry that exists in the spiritual world is the original blissful existence of loving dealings with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it's all been done in a spirit of great love and friendliness and intimacy. Whereas in the material world, it often gets very ugly because it's a perverted reflection of the original rasa, which is actually loving dealings with Krishna. It's one of the indirect relationships. So we've been reading about this in our Nectar of Devotion groups also. But it brings to mind a very good point that you raised, Kiran Prabhu, is that the relationships, how come, because if God is the source of everything, how come all these nasty things exist in this world? Anyone like to answer this question?
Karmic reactions.
Okay, yes. But if God is all great, how come he's created such an... is he responsible for all the nasty situations in this material?
We desire for it.
Hmm?
We desire.
We desire. Okay, yes. And anything else we can do to help explain and understand this? Bhupendraji.
Well, in the spiritual world, everything seems real. In this world it's all perverted. So all the good things it's all in the spiritual world, but here it's a reflection of it.
Can you give us an example of what we mean when we say a perverted reflection?
Just like the tree on the river. You can see the tree is on the land, but when you see the reflection, the fruits are not in the river. The fruits are actually on the land where the tree is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a reflection of it. And we're chasing this fruit, thinking it's the real thing, but actually the real thing is the tree itself, which is standing on the land.
What do we notice? What sort of characteristics do we notice about the reflection?
Temporary.
Illusory.
Temporary, illusory, and upside down. It's all upside down in this world. Because if everyone appreciate this example? If you see a tree with its roots pointing upwards and its branches down, you can see such trees everywhere you go. You just go to the bank of a river and you see that there's the reflection the real tree is there, and the reflect is like that, and the reflection is like that. Yeah. So the reflection hasn't got any really solid. You can't get hold of the branches. You know, you can't get hold of the fruits. It's all jumbled and topsy turvy, actually. And it, as soon as you try to get hold of it, it just breaks up. You know, this is the nature of the material world. It's not solid. It's not real. But it does exist. It is real in the fact that it's temporary. But it exists only because the real tree is there. Otherwise, how can this material world exist? It's certainly very real. If somebody comes and bucks us on the nose, it's very, very real. Is it not? If you bang your toe, your big toe across, or your little toe when you're walking across the room on a chair or a piece of stone or something, it's pretty real. Anyone has this experience? So, we can't say this world isn't real. Actually, it's very solid. It's very real. But compared to the spiritual world, it is transient. It has very limited form. It doesn't last. We see, just like when we get young, we have what we think are very handsome and youthful and virile and full of energetic bodies and yeah, and it's great. But where have they gone? They are finished. Yeah. Absolutely finished. And any moment the whole thing will be finished and we have to take another one. So, but we should know the connection between this world and the spiritual world. And by examining nature, we can actually learn many things about Krishna and his abode. And especially, for example, in the if anybody's read it, I don't know if anybody... Has anybody read the chapter in the Krishna book called A Description of Autumn? It's a fascinating chapter. It's a really fascinating chapter. Is anyone here into observing nature and taking walks in the park and walking on hills and forests and rivers? Anyone into those things?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what I can recommend to you is have a read through. It's a long chapter, A Description of Autumn in the Krishna book. But it's an incredibly interesting chapter because you'll never see nature quite the same again after you've read that. It will be, you'll learn so many things and you'll remember Krishna so much more when you just see nature working all around. When you read that chapter, it's very, very powerful. It changes everything. So anyway, that's what our whole Krishna consciousness movement is about. And Prabhupada explains that by observing nature and by seeing Krishna's glory and appreciating Krishna's glory in nature, we can actually make a lot of advancement. It's a fact. Because we learn to see Krishna's hand everywhere. We learn to see how everything is working exactly according to Krishna's direction. And it's a real experience. It's very, very good. So as we come up to the summer and we get ready for the picnics and walks out into the countryside more, then these are nice opportunities to remember Krishna more. And hopefully we will have some picnics. Maybe we could, when it gets a bit lighter and warmer, maybe we could even do an open-air Bhagavad Gita experience. That might be nice. Or even a Sunday picnic or something like that. Okay.
I'll keep it secret until we get around it.
Okay. All right. So shall we read a little more? Okay. Let's go for text 8. Bhavan. Bhishmash cha karnas cha bhavan bhishmash cha karnas cha kripascha samitim jaya ashvatthama vikarnas cha soma dattis tathaiva cha Bhavan Bhishmascha Karnascha.
Bhavan Bhishmascha Karnascha.
Kripascha Samitim Jana.
Kripascha Samitim Jana.
Ashvatthama Vikarnascha.
Ashvatthama Vikarnascha.
Samodattistataiva cha.
Samodattistataiva cha.
Bhavan.
Bhavan.
Your good self. Bhishma.
Bhishma.
Grandfather Bhishma.
Grandfather Bhishma.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Karna.
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 Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Kripa.
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 Cha.
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 And.
Samitim.
Samitim.
Jaya.
Jaya.
Always victorious in battle.
Always victorious in battle.
Ashvatthama.
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 Vikarna.
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 Cha.
Cha.
As well as.
As well as.
Somadatti.
Somadatti.
The son of Somadatta.
The son of Somadatta.
Tata.
Tata.
As well as.
As well as.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
There are personalities like you. Bhishma, Karna, Kripa, Ashvatthama, Vikarna, and the son of Somadatta called Bhurishrava, who are always victorious in battle. So let's read this. There are personalities like you. Bhishma, Karna,
Kripa, Ashvatthama,
Vikarna, and the son of Somadatta. Called Bhurishrava, who are always victorious in battle. Who would like to read the purport? Okay, go for it.
Duryodhan mentions the exceptional heroes in the battle, all of whom are ever victorious. Vikarna is the brother of Duryodhan, Ashvatthama is the son of Dronacharya, and Somadatti or Bhurishrava is the son of the king of the Balikas. Karna is the half-brother of Arjuna, as he was born of Kunti before her marriage with King Pandu. Kripacharya's twin sister married Dronacharya.
So we get a little bit of the genealogy here, the family history about what's going on. So I'm just going to read a little bit because one of our senior devotees has written this very nice book, Surrender Unto Me, because he wanted to really understand what was going on here in Bhagavad Gita. So he did a lot of digging to get to the bottom of things. So he's got a little insight for us here. Duryodhan was speaking to the great warriors, to the two great warriors, Bhishma and Dronacharya. While the king addressed Dronacharya, all his other fighters gathered to listen. Therefore, Duryodhan, as an expert diplomat, began to describe the Kaurava's strength with the words, Bhavan Bhishmascha Karnascha. Yet before he spoke, he was caught in another difficult situation. Facing him were two great warriors. Bhishma was the commander-in-chief of the army, and Drona was his military guru. Whom then should he mention first? Tricky. Duryodhan was clever. He knew that Bhishma was a Kshatriya and Drona a Brahmin. If he mentioned Bhishma first, Dronacharya would be insulted. As a Kshatriya, however, Bhishma would honor the etiquette of offering the Brahmin more respect. Thus Duryodhan said, Bhavan Bhishmas, there are personalities like you, Dronacharya and Bhishma. He next mentioned Karna. Bhishma and Karna were enemies because Karna thought, what's the use? I will fight and kill everyone and this aged general will get all the credit. Just see the position. Okay. He had vowed, because of that, he'd vowed not to fight until Bhishma was killed. So, you know, there's all sorts of wheels and things going on, you know, just in everyday life on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. But anyway, Duryodhan next mentioned Kripacharya, a relative of Drona, then Ashvatthama, Drona's son. In these ways, he hoped to inspire Drona. Surprisingly, Duryodhan next mentioned his own brother Vikarna. Vikarna was not of the same caliber as Bhishma or Drona, but because he was the only brother who objected to the Kaurava's insult to Draupadi, Duryodhan assumed that he was sympathetic to the Pandavas and that he might defect from the Kaurava army. Therefore, Duryodhan flattered Vikarna by including his name among the more powerful fighters he was relying on. Defection was always an important concern for military leaders. Everyone knows what defection means? It means you leave the camp and you go to the other side, basically. Although Kshatriyas love to fight, they're not always concerned whose side they fight on. Therefore, Yudhisthira announced at the beginning of the war that religious principles allow defection before the battle starts. But once it has begun, warriors must stay on their chosen sides. Both Krishna and Duryodhan were active in recruiting defectors. Krishna and Kunti Devi approached her son Karna and invited him to join the Pandavas' side. Krishna told Karna that he was actually the eldest Pandava, and he encouraged him to fight alongside his brothers, especially because he wouldn't be joining the battle until after Bhishma's death. Karna, however, would not abandon his loyalty to Duryodhan. On his side, Duryodhan both tried to keep Vikarna and to win over the Pandava's uncle, Shalya. Karna needed a fit charioteer, and Shalya was both an acclaimed charioteer and a Maharatha warrior. As Shalya and his army travelled the long distance to join the Pandava side in the battle, they found pleasant accommodations arranged by Duryodhan along the way. Duryodhan's clever ministers encouraged the tired Shalya to make full use of the facilities. They took such good care of him that Shalya said, "Yudhisthira must have arranged these accommodations. Whoever has arranged this for me, I'll do whatever he wants." Duryodhan then appeared and said, "It was I who made these arrangements, and I want you to fight on my side." Salya kept his word, fought for Duryodhan, and eventually became the final Kaurava commander-in-chief. So the final Kaurava commander-in-chief means as the big commanders-in-chief get killed and wiped out of the battle, then someone has to come in and replace them at the helm. Because if you have an army without a commander, then before you know it, you've got a retreating force. Because without anyone to lead you in battle, it's not a very good situation. Okay, so any questions or comments at all? Okay, let's read on to text 9. Anyecha bahavasura,
Anyecha bahavasura,
Madarte chakcha jivita,
Madarte chakcha jivita,
Nana shastra paharana,
Nana shastra paharana,
Sarve yuddha visharada,
Sarve yuddha visharada,
Anyecha bahavashura,
Anyecha bahavashura,
Madarte chaktva, Madarte chakta jivita,
Madarte chakta jivita,
Nana shastra praharana,
Nana shastra praharana,
Sarve yuddha visharada,
Sarve yuddha visharada,
Anye,
others,
cha,
also,
bahava,
in great numbers,
sura,
heroes,
matarte,
for my sake,
chaktva jivita, prepared to risk life,
Nana. Many. Shastra. Weapons. Paharana. Equipped with. Sarve. All of them. Yuddha Visharada. Experienced in military science. There are many other heroes who were prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. All of them are well equipped with different kinds of weapons, and all are experienced in military science. So please respond. There are many other heroes who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. All of them are well equipped with different kinds of weapons. And all are experienced in military science. Someone like to read the book?
As far as the others are concerned, like Jayadratha, Kirtavarma and Salya, all are determined to lay down their lives for Duryodhana's sake. In other words, it is already concluded that all of them would die in the battle of Kurukshetra for joining the party of the sinful Duryodhana. Duryodhana was of course confident of his victory on the account of the above mentioned combined strength of his friends.
Mm. So this is an extraordinary mentality. Yeah, I mean, at least for me, I find it an extraordinary mentality, that this Kshatriya mentality, okay, well, we're all going to get killed for Duryodhana. Hari Bol. But this is the Kshatriya spirit, that they're fighting, and they're not in it for a little punch-up. They're in it, and if they die in the battle, that's very glorious. They have no problem with, you know, seriously fighting, hacking each other to bits, you know, chopping off their arms and legs and heads, killing each other seriously until they're dead. And the idea is that Kshatriya mentality is very strong. And when they get into a fight, it means a fight to the death. One party or another has to die. And this point is made that they're all prepared to lay down their lives for my sake, which is a very interesting foretelling by Duryodhana, that they're all going to be killed. So, what a situation, actually.
Is that what? Just his ahankar, his ego, just think that he thinks that they're dying for his, you know, sake? Or is in fact they're all tied up because of circumstances like Bhishma and even Drona and Karna and Vikarna and and Shalya, who they tricked into getting into battle, and all the other kings who are, like, you know, supporting Bhishma as opposed to supporting Duryodhana, and likewise. So he's assuming that they're dying for him, whereas in fact they've all got something, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? They're all bonded, or they have to give something, you know, back. They're indebted, that's the word I'm looking for, in some ways to Duryodhana.
Hmm.
Whereas, in fact, they're not really dying for him, but because they're indebted in some sort of way.
Kshatriya code involves a great sense of duty. And as we see from Arjuna is an incredibly duty-conscious person. He is so conscious of his duty, because this is his dilemma, actually, on the battlefield. Trying to decide, because there are so many conflicting things going through Arjuna's mind. You know, he's trying to decide what actually is his duty. This is his question to Arjuna, to Krishna. He's saying, because of this duty, I have a duty to protect the society, and that if all the young men and all the all the fathers, all the husbands, all the sons are killed, then this whole society is just going to go to hell. Yeah, what's going to happen to it? It's just going to be unwanted progeny everywhere. The family tradition will be destroyed. And also, my duty is to give worship to men like Drona and Bhishma. They're worthy of my worship. How can I approach them and kill them in battle? He's got lots and lots and lots of different arguments. He's thinking it's better to go and live by begging. That would be a more honorable thing to do, to go and live by begging rather than engage in this ghastly warfare. He's got a lot of different concerns about duty. And because all these concerns about what his duty actually should be, this is why Arjuna is so bewildered. Because he's very, very conscious about what should be done and what should not be done. And therefore he tells Krishna, but for you, Krishna, I can't find anyone who can guide me what to do. Please instruct me. I need your help. And so Krishna says, but Arjuna, we're friends. If we talk, we'll just talk like friends and there'll never be any conclusion. So Arjuna says, no, Krishna, let's put aside that relationship. No more friendly speaking. Now, shishya steham shardimam sharanam prapannam. Now I'm a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me what is best for me. Now I'm your disciple. You are my spiritual master. And then we see those famous immortal words. So Krishna, smiling in the midst of both armies, then spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. So it's a really fascinating story. But each of these points illustrate all these verses in Bhagavad Gita. They're all great personalities. But we actually have no business just talking about great personalities. These people are important because they're related to Krishna. They're relating to this whole incident in which Krishna is bringing everything together to give everyone a great benediction. And in fact, one of the great benedictions that everyone gets as a result of dying on the battlefield of Kurukshetra in the presence of Krishna is they're all going to get spiritual bodies at the end of the battle when they're killed in the presence of Krishna. So everyone's getting real good benefit. They're all getting to hear Bhagavad Gita and they're all going to get spiritual bodies by being killed in the presence of Krishna. Even though they're engaging in the most ferocious fighting with each other. So as devotees, should we sometimes get into it seriously and have big fights with each other? Anyone like to comment or answer this question?
Well, no, we shouldn't just... Well, I mean, this fight is the result of the final straw, as they say. Mm-hmm. Because after having tried all avenues of reason, approach, you know, by law, by going and, you know, begging even, you know, even sending Krishna ultimately to ask, look, you know, give us at least five kingdoms. And when there was no solution, when there was no resolve, there was no other way, this was the final sort of conflict.
Mm.
So when we talk about having to fight with other devotees, it's not the same sort of thing.
Okay.
What was the question about having fight with other devotees? Or?
Yeah, yeah. These people, they seriously get into it when they're having their fights. Should we
having
also?
A big discussion behavior? Is different to having a big fight like it.
So there is a question: should we be engaging in some sort of fight amongst devotees?
Yeah. When we have a disagreement, should we fight like this? Please enlighten us.
That's Kshatriya's duty, isn't it?
Kshatriya's duty to fight on religious principles, yes.
This was religious principles, isn't it?
This was definitely religious principles. So if we have a disagreement or a difference of opinion, should we fight like we're on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and have another Mahabharat war?
Well, what I understood is to aspire to be a devotee is to cultivate in brahminical qualities. So if you have a dispute, then you should use the relevant way of dealing with it. And I think violence would be like completely right.
Last resort.
Yeah.
Okay. But actually here, Arjuna is a devotee, but he's a kshatriya.
But that's his duty. He's a kshatriya. He's a devotee.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But in playing the role, obviously he's a kshatriya.
Okay.
So it's his duty to fight. So okay. He's fighting for Krishna.
Yes.
So that's his perfection, because he's doing his duty, he's doing his fighting, that's accepted as his devotional service.
Yes. He's doing his duty because Krishna says you should do your duty for me. So should I think, well, it's my duty to beat up this other devotee for Krishna? Sorry, I'm just playing the devil's advocate here. I want to see.
We should learn from these pastimes that have already taken place.
So what should we learn?
How to act. So if these pastimes have already happened, they're there to teach us how to act.
Okay, so how can we learn how to act from these pastimes?
By trying to understand what's there, or trying to realize what's there.
So how does this relate to whether we get into a big fight with each other or not?
If we're talking about the same religion, then no.
So we should fight with the other religious people. We should fight with the Muslims and the Christians.
Yeah, if the Muslims, which they did, you know, force upon, say for example, Alexander the Great, he came with his army and then they tried to take over India, and the king wouldn't tell it either because he said, oh God, he's too powerful. Then Janakya, he was a Brahmin, and he said, hold on, what's going on with them? This kid, these Kshatriyas, they can't fight, you know. And if they don't fight, then they'll take over India, you know, in no time. So Janakya, you know, he gathered his own army and said, look, and he took the example from the Bhagavad Gita and said, look, we must defend our, what is right, you know, after all, we having.
Actually, interesting you mentioned Janakya. Because Chanakya, he didn't have his own army.
No.
Because Chanakya Pandit, he was a Brahmin. And what he did was he decided that all the Kshatriyas were too weak. And so therefore what he did was he very cleverly, using great skill and diplomacy, made alliances with some. You know, he got different princes and kings to make alliances with each other, wipe out some of the less and more inimical princes, and got them actually combined and united to actually head out the Muslim invaders and fight them off. His incredible skill and diplomacy, but he always remained completely aloof, so much so was that when King Chandragupta, I think it was, he questioned him, he said, why did you do that? And he said, well, if you're going to question me about my activities and what I'm doing, then I resign. He always remained completely, he was never in anyone's pocket. As a Brahmin, he was always aloof. And this is one of the problems with Drona, is because he was in Duryodhana's pocket. And he wasn't aloof, he was actually captured. Duryodhana cleverly got him just where he wanted him. But actually a Brahmin is meant to be always independent. The Brahmins are not meant to take a salary. The Brahmins are only meant... I was listening to a nice story today. Have I briefly got time to tell a little story? Briefly, okay. There's one story, Prabhupada was explaining on this point, that one very poor, there was one young boy, and he was very poor, but the system was that the Brahmins would never take any payment. In fact, what they would do is they would teach everyone, but they would never take any salary. But if they had some need, then people would give them what they wanted in charity. That was the natural Brahminical system. No question of a salary. They didn't get paid to do their teaching. This is a Brahmin. So this, in one village, this one Brahmin, he had thousands of students. And the time came for his father's anniversary of his passing away, and he wanted to have a big festival in honor of his father. So he requested everyone to please bring something for the festival, and he asked them all what they were going to bring. And one boy would say, oh, I'll bring rice, and another would say ghee, and I'll bring this and that and the other, and to make the thing. And then they came to this very young, very poor young boy, and asked him, what are you going to give? And he said, well, I don't know, I'll have to ask my mother first. So he said, all right, you go and ask your mother. So the young boy, he went to ask his mother, and she said, well, my dear son, I'm really sorry, but we're so poor, we can't give anything. What can we give? So he said, but my dear mother, everybody else is giving this and the other and the other and things to our teacher. It's our duty to give him something. So she said, well, the best thing to do is you better ask Dinabandhu. He is the friend of the poor. Dinabandhu, he is the Supreme Lord. He is the friend of the poor. And he can actually help you. You go and ask him what to give. She said, well, this young boy, very innocent young boy, he said, well, where can I find Dinabandhu? And she said, well, a lot of sages go and look for him in the forest. So he trotted off to the forest and he was calling out, Dinabandhu! Dinabandhu Dada! And he's calling for him. And he was so eager to see Dinabandhu that the Lord appeared to him and said, okay, what can I do, my dear brother? What would you like? He said, well, he explained the situation that I have to give something for my teacher's festival. So he said, all right, I will give you something. So he said, well, what can I promise? What can I promise to give? So he said, you promise to give yogurt. So this young boy, he was very happy, and he went back and told his teacher, yes, I'm going to, Dinabandhu Dada says I can I can give yogurt. So I will give yogurt. Anyone know the story?
No.
Okay. So anyway, the time came for the festival. Everybody bought all their grains and ghee and everything and bought all the nice arrangements. And the young boy, he went into the forest and he called again for Dinabandhu, and Dinabandhu gave him his little pot of yogurt. So he brought it before the teacher, and the teacher looked at it with disbelief. He said, what are you going to do with a little pot of yogurt? You've got thousands of people here. This is useless. And he threw the pot on the floor. He was so angry with the little boy. And after some time, he came and picked up the pot. And he saw that actually it was full of yogurt. All the yogurt had fallen on the floor, but it was still full of yogurt. So again, he threw it on the floor. And all the yogurt came out. And again, he picked it up and saw again. It's full of yogurt. And again he threw it on the floor, and again he saw it's full of yogurt. So then he could understand that this is something very, very special. Dinabandhu Dada, he is the friend of the poor, and there's no limit, and that actually he is providing unlimitedly for everyone. There is no limit to what Krishna actually can provide. So he could understand this was a very transcendental arrangement of the Supreme Lord, and that this pot was not an ordinary pot, and that this Dinabandhu was not an ordinary Dada. So anyway, the principle is there, though, is that the Brahmins, they live very simply, and they live very, how should we say, austerely. They don't accumulate wealth. Actually, the Brahmins' business is to keep themselves in a poverty-stricken condition. And as soon as they get in a position whereby they become dependent on somebody else's mercy instead of independent, then they become what happened to Drona. He became in the pocket, and he had to fight on behalf of the sinful Duryodhana, because it wouldn't look good. He'd accepted grains and charity and hospitality from Duryodhana, and if he didn't fight for him, it's going to look bad. Got him. So this is, you know,
so
something.
So he shouldn't fight then.
Hmm?
So we shouldn't fight then?
We shouldn't fight. Well, the point, I was making different points, but the point is about fighting. We should see what Krishna did. Krishna, he tried everything to peacefully, he tried everything to peacefully come to a good arrangement, but only as a very last resort, a very, very last resort, should we get into the fighting. Because the fighting, violence basically, is not a good principle. And we see this in the case of Parashuram. It's interesting because this whole thing is being fought at Kurukshetra. And Kurukshetra is the scene of giant lakes. Anyone know how those lakes were created?
Blood.
Blood, yeah. They're created by blood, by Parashuram.
The blood of the Kshatriyas.
Yeah, 21 generations of Kshatriya. Parashuram, you know, he's got a big chopper. And he actually slaughtered 21 generations of Kshatriyas because they were not in order. They were proud, envious of the Brahmin class. And so he decided the only thing to do was actually kill them. And the lakes in Kurukshetra were created by the blood of these Kshatriyas. And blood, when it's left for some time, it turns into water. And that water is a place of pilgrimage. People go and they take their bath in this water, which is these lakes in Kurukshetra. So this, the beginning stanza of Bhagavad Gita is Dharma Kshetra Kurukshetra. This Kurukshetra is a place of pilgrimage and has been a place of pilgrimage for many, many thousands of years. The demigods would come to purify themselves by coming and taking bath and performing yajna at the Dharma Kshetra, the place Kurukshetra, this place of pilgrimage. So anyway, a few interesting points to try to gradually bring it all together. So we'll discuss more next time. So I thank you all very much indeed for being very patient and enthusiastic and looking very bright and shining with your new tilak as well. It's really good. So maybe we can do this as a regular thing. I hope it's all been helpful. Any comments, please tell me afterwards. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai gaura premanandi. Hari Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutalaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaura Prabhupada Chana Srisha Sanyavana Prasthi Chana. So we have short gita. While we're just getting all the books and everything put away, I just mentioned that Thursday is Lord Balaram's Rasalila Day. And we'll be having a nice program. So we usually have a Nectar of Devotion group on Thursday evening. But we'll be...